Thank you. This is not a meditative practice that I sit down to do. It's just one that I do in the course of my activities where I am. If I'm watching something or reading something that's hard to take in, triggers upset, refusal, where the natural response is to, ooh, no, I don't want that. But to do instead, take it right through the heart. Yeah, that's my favorite thing to do. Do you want that too? Okay, let's see. The first one was fear not. And that's when you get, that's a sonnet. You who let yourselves feel. You who let yourselves feel. Enter the breathing that is more than your own. Let it brush your cheeks as it divides and rejoins behind you. Blessed ones, whole ones, you where the heart begins. You are the bow that shoots the arrow, and you are the target. Fear not the pain. Fear not the pain, let its weight fall back into the earth, for heavy are the mountains and heavy are the seas. Give yourselves to the air, to what you cannot hold. Actually, I jumped two lines. The last triplet really goes like this. After the fear not the pain, for heavy are the mountains, heavy the seas. Then he says, the trees you planted in childhood have grown too heavy. You cannot bring them along. Give yourselves to the air, to what you cannot hold. And then what was the next one? Oh, the loved one. Yeah. Oh, that's dear darkening ground. Yeah, dear darkening ground. You've endured so patiently the walls we built. Oh, no, this is here, isn't it? Yeah. Dear darkening ground, you've endured so patiently the walls we've built. Perhaps you'll give the cities one more hour and grant the churches and cloisters too, and those that labor, will you let their work grip them another 5 hours or seven before you become forest again and water and widening wilderness? In that hour of inconceivable terror, when you take back your name from all things. Just give me a little more time. I just want a little more time because I want to love the things as no one has thought to love them until they are real and ripe and worthy of you. And then this one says, I want only 7 days, 7 on which no one has ever written himself, 7 pages of solitude. There will be a book that includes these pages, and the one who takes it in his hands will sit looking at it until he feels you holding him and writing through him. I wanted to end on the loving thing because that's the message that I want you to have. And then there was quiet friend who has come so far. Feel how your breathing makes more space around you. Let this darkness be a bell tower, and you the bell. And as you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. So move back and forth into the changes. What's it like, this intensity of pain? If the drink is bitter, turn yourself to wine. In this uncontainable night, be the mystery at the crossroads of your senses and the meaning discovered there. And if the world has ceased to hear you, say to the silent earth, I flow. And to the silent rushing water, say, I am. And no place in that is there a holding back. In no place in that is there a feeling of, oh, this might hurt. All birth of consciousness is painful, Jung said. A great birth of consciousness is here for us now. And we have each other. We can only do this with each other. This is not the time for individual heroics. This is not the time for the lonely cowboy ego. Some of the great teachers are recognizing this. We have such a great thing to do together. And we feel so much the commonality of our task, heart to heart, that we can't tell whether we're helping each other or ourselves. But it's not emerging. It's an individuation, as you should know, of all people, where the most oddest, even orneriest, even queerest part of you can come in and have some great predetermined almost role to play, something that you can see, that you can do. As you reach out your hand for the others, and you discover that then that what you gain and what you give, there's no, almost no distinction, is there? Because this is the time for our awakening to the great reciprocity at the heart of the universe. The teacher inside each of us and the follower inside each of us. And each being brought into value in our time. Last month was the 30th anniversary of the disaster at Chernobyl. At the time that I heard about that, I was a visiting teacher at Pendle Hill with my husband. My husband, Fran Macy, was a scholar and lover of Russian culture, who, in order to exercise his fascination with Russia, became an expert on the Soviet Union and worked for the government of the United States and overseas information service. But he loved the people, and he came to a point where he had to move away from diplomatic work with the enemy psychosis, kind of defeating so much in our relations with that extraordinary culture. And it was when we were at Pendle Hill that he was taking that year with me to think of how he could return to his work with love for the Russian people without the constraints and burdens of this American US government agenda. And that meant taking part in third track diplomacy, people to people. And he began taking groups over, first psychologists, then educators, then environmentalists. When Chernobyl blew, the explosion and the great fires that burned for days, I felt that the world, that our earth had never, that this was the greatest blow to our earth up until that point. Now it's been even exceeded by what's happened a little over 5 years ago in Fukushima. But when I went with my husband 5 years later to Kiev for a people's tribunal, there the people themselves could talk about it openly, because the Chernobyl disaster was what broke apart the Soviet Union, and it was already over then. And we went up and we visited areas around this, the Chernobyl site. And as we did, we thought of the work that we'd been coming to do, the work I've been describing to you. And we thought, let's come back and offer this work, this despair and empowerment work, which by then we were calling deep ecology work because it reunited us with the living body of Earth. And we made plans with Russian colleagues who were using this work already in Russia and Ukraine and Belarus. And we came the following year and we went with this work to from town to town, gambling on the conviction that it would be useful for massive collective trauma, where a whole trauma for a whole community and beyond. But I'd never done anything quite like that before. We're a team of four, and I, the leader, was the only one who didn't speak Russian, but that was all right, because we had these two Russian psychologists and a physician were with us, Yuri and Harash, and they were incredible. And they loved the work. And but Harash particularly, and I, Fran would translate into my ear so I could keep up, but I wanted to do one thing that didn't involve translation, and so I brought the tape of the Elm Dance, and maybe we can even do it here. Harash wanted us, and I'm going to close with this story. Harash wanted us to go to a particular town. This town had captured his heart. It was also the most contaminated city that was still inhabited. It was in Russia, just over the border from Chernobyl in the Ukraine. So that was where we ended up. We were traveling from west to east, and then we ended up in a town called Novozibkov. And it was, interestingly enough, a town that Tolstoy had been interested in, because he was very interested in the phenomenon of the old believers. It was a particular center of this more ancient form of Russian Orthodoxy. And it was a light industrial town. and what had caused. Then on the way, Harash told us why he wanted us to go there. And it was because of the circumstances of its contamination, that when at a certain point while the Chernobyl was burning, the winds shifted. They had been blowing due west across Europe, and then it came up and around and into the Irish Sea and everything. But this, it shifted and was blowing to the east-northeast toward Moscow, that heavily populated capital area. And the decision was taken very quickly to save that population and the center of government by seeding the clouds. And that caused a heavy precipitation of hot particles and cesium and strontium and iodine down into this agricultural area around, and the heaviest was around the town of Novozibkov. And they never told the people, because how do you tell a people that they're dispensable? But of course they found out because of the recruitment of people, young men as well as soldiers, to fight the fires at Chernobyl. So he wanted us to go. He said they have two layers of suffering of this, that it's induced by their own government, and that they were never evacuated, and there was kind of a silence. So when we got there, I was found to my surprise that instead of the great title that Fran and I sounded so good, Soviet, building a strong post-Chernobyl culture. But no, they named it something else. It's building harmonious family relationships. And I said, what's this about? We come on. And Harash said, just comment. You know, they know it's about Chernobyl, but this is what Chernobyl is for them now. It's sullen marriages, domestic fighting and violence, addicted kids, acting out, distressed. So I found once we started for 3 days that they were, we were sitting just 50 of them, so we'd have room to work, and dance, and found that they wouldn't even say the word, the name Chernobyl. They would refer to the event. Well, that was before the event, or that was after the event, not talking about it. So we decided, okay, we'll do, and we adapted our exercises and processes to remembering and talking, role-playing parents and children. And they enjoyed that. And then we got to role-playing family situations that took the people back, well back before the disaster. They loved that. And they loved remembering and acting out scenes of visiting their grandparents at their dachas, or fishing in the Dnieper, or exploring and picnicking and mushrooming in the forests. And the but no mention. It was absolutely silent treatment, as if it had never existed. Until the afternoon of the second full day. And we were doing a process where people are moving around as if on a vast wheel. It's one of our favorite processes. It's going back through time to the beginning of the human story.